Have you looked at your team, and does your team reflect from a business perspective our customer base, our student base, and the enterprises, hospital systems, etc., that we serve? Because if not, we will not know how to serve them.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophia Gori-Ahmad, your host of All Encompassing, the McLarty Associates podcast. I'd like to take a moment to say that I hope everyone is staying safe and healthy in these unprecedented times. Today, we're really pleased to welcome Lisa Wardell, Chairwoman and CEO of Adtalem Global Education. Adtalem, which means to empower in Latin, provides degrees, certificates, and continuing education for the healthcare and financial services industries. Lisa was appointed Chairwoman of the Board in 2019 and has been President and CEO since 2016. Prior to her current position at Adtalem, Lisa was Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer for the RLJ Companies, an American asset investment firm. Lisa, it's such a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Sophia, thank you for having me. I am very excited to be here.
I will just jump right in. I have so many questions to ask you, but you are Chairwoman and CEO of Adtalem and former COO of an investment managing firm. And you're recently featured in Wall Street Journal as one of the few female Black executives who has reached the top. You're among the few Black women who are in charge of a publicly traded company in the U.S. And I really want to know about your story and sort of how and any advice you have for our listeners on sort of your trajectory and your pathway.
Absolutely. Well, I will start by saying people often ask me, was it your plan to become a public company CEO? And I have to say, absolutely not. I did not have that much vision and foresight. But what I would say is that I knew that from a very early age, primarily because my parents taught me this, the two things. One, obviously, work ethic and making sure that I was working hard. But more importantly, education and being able to get my education and go as far as I could from an educational perspective was going to change my options in my life. And so I am a first generation college graduate. Both of my parents worked several jobs my entire life and their entire lives, but neither went to college. So I knew that that was something that I wanted to do. Went on to law school and to business school, and then really set about industries and getting experience where I would be able to use strategy, business knowledge, and really going in and about transforming, building and transforming businesses.
That's such an amazing story because so much of us, you know, I'm first generation American. My parents immigrated here, and that struggle to see your parents, you know, working multiple jobs and sort of, and that struggle that you see kind of ingrains in you as their child, that sort of work ethic to work hard. And you didn't just go to any law school. You went to Stanford Law School. You went to Wharton School of Business. So I want to flag that for our listeners that, you're obviously highly qualified and educated, but I do want to congratulate you on all of your achievements because they're amazing.
Well, thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about Adtalem? Let's start there because I want our listeners to make sure that they understand all of the various verticals that you work in.
Absolutely. And I will tell you that the reason that I am at Adtalem is absolutely because of this education notion and the notion that education, not even notion, but reality that education can change trajectories of lives. So Adtalem Global Education does education in two areas, medical and healthcare and financial services. And what we do is two things. One, we do have degree programs, primarily in medical and healthcare. So there we have a nursing school, largest nursing school in the country. We have two medical schools and we have a veterinary school. And those institutions together do a couple of things. They allow access to education for individuals who might not otherwise get it. So a lot of our students, let's take our nursing school as an example, are likely working at least part-time, if not full-time. They typically have families, maybe slightly older than undergrads who are coming out without those types of responsibilities. And so as a result of that, we have to be really flexible in the way that we offer our education. So not just now during this pandemic, but always we've had online options. In fact, we have full programs that are online other than the clinical parts of that. We have accelerated programs for bachelor science in nursing, for example, that takes life experience and competencies into our sort of decision around students. And then we have a lot of services around our students to help them really get to the degree. And then, of course, to the job. What's great about that is our enterprise strategy across medical healthcare and financial services is we're a workforce solutions provider. So we're trying to solve really difficult problems for hospital systems. They need bachelor's of science in nursing. They need family nurse practitioners because there's such a shortage of physicians. They need physicians who are diverse. We graduate the highest number of Black male physicians every year in the United States. And so that allows us to really meet the needs of the employers, but at the same time, be able to provide this positioning. In financial services, you know, one of the things that's being debated, Sophia, right now in education and particularly higher education is, you know, the four-year degree is not necessary for every position or career path. Right. And sometimes it's necessary, but then there's all this new upskilling that individuals need to remain relevant in the market, particularly minority individuals. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you an example. In financial services, with artificial intelligence, digital banking, all of these new technologies, people really need to remain relevant in terms of cybercrime, anti-money laundering, et cetera. And we provide that certification and ongoing training at Adtalem.
That's fantastic. I love that the focus that you're sort of looking at in terms of racial and gender diversity, because it's such an important thing when it comes to graduate school. And I'm sure you experienced it in law school, as did I, walking into a room and feeling like I didn't belong in that room. But in this area, in this era of remote learning, and, you know, all of us are kind of adjusting to that right now. Where do you see advanced education going, especially for curriculum that's relies heavily on in-person learning, like per se medical school or veterinary school?
Yeah, it's very interesting because there is so much of the curriculum that can be delivered online and through e-learning, particularly as we now have native technologists, right, who are coming into the system. Those folks like me who took pen and paper notes in college are a thing of the past. What is important, though, is within those online learning platforms, it needs to have a couple of things. First of all, you need to have faculty who actually know how to teach online and have a integrated discussion-based classroom, even though it is virtual. So many universities and colleges are, and actually even K-12, are dealing with this right now because they had an all physical curriculum, obviously, in person. And, you know, simply shifting that to the professor on a Zoom call, giving his lecture and everyone else sort of listening, that's not really online learning. Online learning is that mode of having the discussions and the ability. And to do that, and in our case, where we have a very high level of gender diversity, ethnicity diversity within our student base, we also have to make sure that there's a cultural competency with professors as they're in this online forum. So really a dual change, I think, coming to higher learning and online education.
I think that you actually are focused in on sort of a lot of the important discussions that are happening now as, you know, public schools and whatnot are shifting to distance learning. I feel like you've already got a leg up on that because you've been doing this for so long and you sort of incorporated those elements as schools are now trying to do that now. And I worry how, you know, students of color, how they'll be left behind, you know, unfortunately, and hopefully not, but how they might be left behind in the upcoming school year because of, you know, so many different variables for distance learning and how it might impact those communities. But
yeah, I think you're exactly right. I mean, there's the digital divide in terms of do they have the technology? And we're seeing some of the corporates as well as some of the state and local governments make sure that the students have the actual tools they need. And then, of course, there is just that ability to learn and have those competencies going into that, whether it's K through 12 or higher ed. But I have great optimism around that because I'm watching the education fintechs. I'm watching companies like K-12. I'm watching companies like ours and like other online providers really take these issues to task and make sure that we don't continue the disparities. It's kind of accelerating that question around the disparities that were always there, but now they're just so much easier to see.
No, that's true. Can you tell us a little bit about on the financial services side of AdTalem? I'd love to learn and hear more about what you're doing on to counter human trafficking and anti-money laundering. I think you all are doing some really fascinating things.
Yes, absolutely. So a lot of times people ask me, well, how does financial services, fit with your mission for education and sort of doing good in the world? And it's a neat story. So we have a couple of different companies and institutions, but ACAMS is our system and platform for teaching, certifying, and training people on anti-money laundering, know your customer, cybercrime, fraud, risk assessment, et cetera. And ACAMS is a membership organization, and each of those folks work in all of the big financial institutions, anywhere that you bank, there will be people who are CAMS certified. And really what they're doing is preventing financial crime and money laundering, which directly ties to human trafficking, sex trafficking, which, as we all know, disproportionately hits poor communities and it hits women and unfortunately, young girls of color. And so we've been able to make quite a dent in the background sort of money and transactional piece that allows that to happen. Because as we all know, if we can stop that and the movement of that, of those flows of funds, that will go a long way to stopping such tragic activities that happen globally. So we're very proud of that work that we do at AdTalem.
That's amazing. So a lot of what we talk about on this podcast is leadership. We talk about a lot of the gender issues, which I'm sure you face. And I cannot wait to ask you about, to sort of ask you about some of these things that we talk about often on the show. But when you were at RLJ, your mentor, Bob Johnson, told you that until you believe that you belong in the room, you don't belong in the room. Yeah. And what, based on that and based on your experiences, what advice would you give women who are trying to climb that corporate ladder and they find themselves in a room of mostly, you know, older white men? How do you sort of navigate that?
Yeah, look, so I think it is something that ultimately, first of all, we have to say to ourselves, we will experience that in our career in one way or another. Now, things are changing because obviously corporations are requiring that service providers and vendors and others have diversity. There's no question. But that is something that you will encounter. And so what I always advice that I like to give to women who are in that workforce is, first of all, you do not have to be an expert on all. You don't have to feel like you have to speak on everything. And you particularly don't have to feel like you have to speak for whatever particular profile you represent, whether that's Black woman, Latinx woman, you don't always have to do that. But what you do have to do is trust your gut when there are things that you or areas that you know you have expertise, and you should not always just defer and think that someone else has more expertise because they've been in the room longer or frankly because they're a white male. And I think that the earlier you learn that, and it can be done in a way that is not confrontational. It can be much more questioning, sort of, you know, here's the way I think about something. Have you thought about that? And I think the more that we sort of hold folks to task around that, because those folks are sometimes wanting to learn also. It's not, so many things are not intentional. They are just driven by the social construct of how this country has developed. And so we can be a part of, you know, making that change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, I absolutely think that we talk about that. I talk about this a lot with other colleagues and friends, is sort of how do you navigate this? And for those of us who are new in these spaces and feel that intimidation. I mean, you know, when I was reading Michelle Obama's book and I heard her talk about her own self-doubt and imposter syndrome, thought yeah. if she has it, then yeah. it's okay that yeah. many of us right. also have it too.
Yes. And I have absolutely, definitely had that. And at the same time, you know, you also can't get too comfortable because you have to be ready. I mean, I hate to say this, but it is the truth. You have to be ready to respond when things do happen. I'll give you a perfect example. I was on a non-deal roadshow. So basically going out and telling investors, potential investors about my company, not while we're raising money, but just, hey, you should buy our stock. And here's why, here's how great we are and what we've been doing. Maybe I've been here 4 years now. So maybe a year into my tenure. And we did a little go on the road, meet a few investors, and we were meeting an investor, you know, multi-billionaire and made lots of money in lots of different industries, including education. He wanted to meet at his favorite restaurant, which was a pretty interesting diner. And we were sitting waiting for him. And true story, he came up behind me, slapped me on my back and said, "What is a girl like you? How did a girl like you ever get a job like this?" And it was like a football slap, like a good slap. And I was like,
"Oh my God,
hurt them every time they go out and play, because that really hurt." And my CFO, who at the time was a white male, was looking at me like, "Oh my goodness, what is she going to do?" And I said, "Well, a girl like me has really turned this company around. Why don't you sit down and let me tell you
what we're focused
on?" And I was able to,
pick
it up and do it. And but you sort of had to be there to believe it. But though, you know, to me, those experiences absolutely. They make you stronger. And so you can't always go in half empty and like, "Oh my gosh, they're going to be looking at me differently and seeing me differently because I'm black or because I'm a woman or because yeah. I'm, you can't do that." But you do have to make sure, that you meet those times and experiences with grace. And for me, being around, people who can react, you know, very, very well and statesmanlike and graciously in those situations, Bob Johnson, Mac McClarty, I'd spent a lot of time with them. And so that yeah. has been helpful for me.
That's such a crazy story, but I've heard it from so many people, so I'm not surprised. But yeah. you're so right about mentors and being able to be around people who empower you and teach you leadership. And, Mac McClarty is definitely one of those people who just being around him, you learn so much.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you also about racial and gender diversity at sort of a senior executive level. And, you know, you've increased your own board's diversity by 50%, which is amazing. And you've done this by kind of mentoring candidates that haven't had prior board experience. And this is something I think in the recent, you know, sort of Black Lives Matters movement, and that's been shining a light on the lack of diversity, both gender and racial, at a lot of the boards of Fortune 500 companies. So for our clients, for others who are listening, I would love for you to kind of map out and talk about how you've done this and what kind of training can you provide people so that you are opening that door for new voices and diverse voices.
Sure, absolutely. Love to. One of my favorite subjects. So first of all, it has to be very intentional. The Ad Talent Board was, I came off of the Ad Talent Board, I became the CEO from the Ad Talent Board. So it did have some diversity, but you absolutely have to be intentional and you have to have a plan for the board, just like you would have a succession plan for your management team. And in fact, I worked in parallel on my management team, which was not very diverse, as well as my board. It's important to have a diverse board, and that does not mean, you know, one woman and one Black person and one Latinx. It means a diverse board because you can then get the perspective and the resources and the lens on the board to support a broader diversity and inclusion agenda. So that's the first. The first thing I did was I recruited women with out prior public board experience. One is African-American, two were not African-American, but never been on a board, highly, highly qualified in terms of experience. This little footnote that anyone can be on the board, but they must have prior public board experience is literally keeping hundreds of really qualified people out of the boardroom. And you simply have to be able to take a chance. And then you say, you need to go take this audit masterclass. We need you to take this training. Here's the things that you need to know about the difference between management and board, et cetera. These have been some of the best board members and most productive board members that we've had at Ad Talent. So that's definitely one tip. The second, as it relates to management, you have to measure it. You have to make it part of performance reviews and compensation, not saying you can only hire diverse people, but just have you looked at your team and does your team reflect from a business perspective, our customer base, our student base, and the enterprises, hospital systems, et cetera, that we serve? Because if not, we will not know how to serve them. So tying that back to your business needs, rewarding people who are taking diversity seriously through compensation and performance. And more importantly, that inclusion piece, Sophia, can really, it can really be tricky because you can do all the diversity initiatives you want, but if you don't have a you belong here mentality throughout your organization, you're not going to be able to include people. They're not going to feel like they belong in the room. They're going to have imposter syndrome, and you're going to have this great talent that leaves your organization. So I would also suggest that people really try to think about both sides of that. As I told my team early on, hey, before we get to inclusion, we ought to get some diversity so we got some people to include. Let's start there. Once we've done that, you know, we can then, of course, make sure that people's needs are being met. And I think we're seeing that now during this time of the Black Lives Matter movement and social justice, et cetera. And people, leaders, whether they're corporate leaders, et cetera, are speaking out just in a different way about what that means and how we need to make sure our diverse community, in this case, Black employees, are just really feeling safe and heard in the corporate environment.
I applaud you for all that you've done to empower people, because I think it needs to happen much more in the corporate space, and you've actually done it. And it's really an example of how other companies can do it. So Lisa, I don't want to take up too much of your time, and I want to thank you for spending a few minutes with us and chatting with us about your experiences. I am so amazed by you and the trajectory. I have to say your family must be so, so proud of all of your accomplishments. And I do hope that we get to chat again later in the future and have you back on the podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I will leave you with this. We are in a global health pandemic. We are in a social justice change and pandemic. And as we think about leaders and we think about how leaders need to move, I would suggest that people really think about being comfortable with ambiguity, being able to transform through change, and think about this time as a journey where we can all get better together and get better as individuals and see through one another's lens. So I'm really excited about where we are and the future. And I am so thankful that you took a few moments to spend with me on this podcast. I am humbled and I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for spending time with us this afternoon, Lisa. I really enjoyed speaking with you and hearing your insights on leadership and learning more about Adtalem. I think our listeners really appreciated it as well. So thank you again, and I look forward to speaking with you soon.
Thank you.